Okay, we are continuing chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. We have a kitten who's scrambling around because she's adorable.
Super snuggly.
She's super snuggly with her bear. I wish Hagrid would hurry up and get back, that's all, said Harry in a low voice as they reached the greenhouses. And don't say that grubbly plank woman's a better teacher, he added threateningly. I wasn't going to, said Hermione calmly. Because she'll never be as good as Hagrid, said Harry. Fully aware that he had just experienced an exemplary care of magical creatures lesson, I was thoroughly annoyed by it. Why do they like Hagrid? I still don't get it. Anyways.
He's nice.
The door of the nearest greenhouse opened, and some fourth years spilled out, including Ginny. Hi, she said brightly as she passed. A few seconds later, Luna Lovegood emerged, behind the rest of the class, a smudge of earth on her nose, and her hair tied in a knot above the top of her head. When she saw Harry, her prominent eyes seemed to bulge excitedly. She made a beeline straight for him. Many of his classmates turned to watch. Luna took a great breath and said, without much preliminary, I believe he who must not be named is back, and I believe you fought him and escaped from him. Right, said Harry awkwardly. Luna was wearing what looked like a pair of orange radishes for earrings, a fact that Parvati and Lavender seemed to have noticed as they were both giggling and pointing at her earlobes. You can laugh, Luna said, her voice rising. Apparently under the impression that Parvati and Lavender were laughing at what she had said rather than what she was wearing. But people used to believe there were no such things as a blubbering humdinger or the crumpled horned snorknack.
Snorkack.
How do you know these things?
I just am a Harry Potter nerd.
But how many times have you read this book?
Maybe once. Maybe twice.
Then how do you remember that word?
I just know.
Do you read online stuff?
I told you, I just am a Harry Potter nerd.
Well, they were right, weren't they? Said Hermione impatiently. There weren't any such thing as the blubbering humdinger or the crumple-horned snorkack. Luna gave her a withering look and flounced away, radishes swinging madly. Parvati and Lavender were not the only ones hooting with laughter now. Do you mind not offending the only people who believe me? Harry asked Hermione as they made their way into class. Oh, heaven's sake, Harry, you can do a lot better than her, said Hermione. Ginny's told me about her. Apparently, she'll only believe things as long as there's no proof at all. Well, I wouldn't expect anything from someone else, from someone whose father runs the Quibbler. Harry thought of the sinister winged horses he had seen on the night he had arrived. Now Luna said she could see them too. His spirits sank slightly. Had she been lying? Before he could devote much more thought to the matter, Ernie McMillan had stepped up. I want you to know, Potter, he said in a loud, caring voice, that it's not only weirdos who support you. I personally believe you 100%. My family have always stood firm behind Dumbledore, and so do I. Thanks so much, Harry. Ernie, said Harry, taken aback but pleased. Ernie might be pompous on occasions like this, but Harry was in a mood to deeply appreciate a vote of confidence from someone not wearing radishes in their ears. Ernie's words suddenly wiped the smile from Lavender Brown's face, and as he turned to talk to Ron and Hermione, Harry caught Seamus's expression, which looked both confused and defiant. To nobody's surprise, Professor Sprout started their lesson by lecturing them about the importance of owls. Harry wished all the teachers would stop doing this. He was starting to get anxious, a twisting feeling in his stomach every time. He remembered how much homework he had to do. A feeling that worsened dramatically when Professor Sprout gave them yet another essay at the end of class. Tired and smelling strongly of dragon dung, which was Professor Sprout's preferred brand of fertilizer, the Gryffindors trooped back up to the castle, none of them talking very much. It had been another long day. As Harry was starving and he had his first detention with Umbridge at 5 o'clock, he headed straight for dinner without dropping off his bag at Gryffindor Tower so that he could bolt something down before facing whatever she had in store for him. He had barely reached the entrance to the Great Hall, however, when a loud, angry voice said, Hey, Potter. What now? He muttered wearily and turned to face Angelina Johnson, who looked as though she was in a towering temper. I'll tell you what, she said, marching straight up to him and poking him hard in the chest. How come you've landed yourself in detention after 5 o'clock on Friday? What? Harry, said Harry. Oh, yeah, keeper tryouts. Now he remembers, snarled Angelina. Didn't I tell you I wanted to do a tryout with the whole team and find
Why
someone
who... Why is Harry important for that, though?
He's not. He's not actually part of the team. Who fitted in with everyone else? Didn't I tell you I'd booked the Quidditch pitch specially, and now you've decided you're not going to be there? I didn't decide not to be there, said Harry, stung by the injustice of those words. I get detention from that Umbridge woman just because I told her the truth about you know who. Well, you can just go straight to her and ask her to let you off on Friday, said Angelina fiercely. And I'll go care how you do it. Tell her you know who's a figment of your imagination, if you like. Just make sure you're there. She stormed away. You know what, Harry said to Ron and Hermione as they entered the Great Hall. I think we'd better check with Puddlemere United on whether Oliver Wood's been killed during a training session, because she seems to be channeling his spirit. What do you reckon are the odds Umbridge will let you off on Friday, said Ron skeptically, as they sat down at the Gryffindor table. Less than zero, said Harry, glumly, tipping lamb chops onto his plate and starting to eat. Better try, though, hadn't I? I'll offer to do two more detentions or something, I don't know. He swallowed a mouthful of potato and added, I hope she doesn't keep me too long this evening. You realize we've got to write 3 essays, practice vanishing spells for McGonagall, work out a counter charm for Flitwick, finish the bow truckle drawing, and start that stupid dream diary for Trelawney. Ron moaned, and for some reason glanced up at the ceiling. And it looks like it's going to rain. What's that got to do with our homework, said Ron. Said Hermione, her eyebrows raised. Nothing, said Ron at once, his ears reddening. What does that have to do with his homework? At 5 to 5, Harry bade the other two goodbye and set off for Umbridge's office on the 3rd floor. Maybe we should stop before.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, because he's just going to be with Umbridge for, like, a while.
So, no more. You can stop. He's with Umbridge.
When he knocked on the door, she said, come in a sugary voice. He entered cautiously, looking around. He had known this office under 3 of the previous occupants. In the days when Gilderoy Lockhart had lived there, it had been plastered in beaming portraits of its owner. When Lupin had occupied it, it was likely you would meet some fascinating dark creature in a cage, or tank if you came to call. In the imposter Moody's day, it had been packed with various instruments and artifacts for detection of wrongdoing and concealment. Now, however, it looked totally unrecognizable. The surfaces had all been draped in lacy covers and cloths. There were several vases full of dried flowers, each residing in its own doily, and on one of the walls was a collection of ornamental plates, each decorated with a large technicolor kitten wearing a different bow around its neck. These were so foul that Harry stared at them, transfixed, till Professor Umbridge spoke again. Good evening, Mr. Potter. Harry started and looked around. He had not noticed her at first, because she, too, was wearing a luridly flowery set of robes that blended in well with the tablecloth on the desk behind her. Evening, said Harry stiffly.
Well, sit down,
she said, pointing toward a small table draped in lace, beside which she'd drawn up a straight-backed chair. A piece of blank parchment lay on a table, apparently waiting for him. Said Harry, without moving. Professor Umbridge, before we start, I wanted to ask you a favor. Her bulging eyes narrowed.
Oh, yes?
Well, I'm on the Gryffindor Quidditch team, and I was supposed to be at tryouts for the new keeper at 5 o'clock on Friday, and I was wondering if I could skip detention that night and do it another night instead. He knew long before he reached the end of the sentence that it was no good.
Oh, no,
said Umbridge, smiling so widely that she looked as though she was swallowing a particularly juicy fly.
Oh, no, no, no. This is your punishment for spreading evil, nasty, attention-seeking stories, Mr. Potter. And punishment certainly cannot be adjusted to suit the guilty one's convenience. No, you will come here on Friday at 5 o'clock, and you will do your detentions as planned. I think it's a rather good thing that you're missing something you really want to do. It ought to reinforce the lesson I'm trying to teach you.
Harry felt the blood surge to his head and heard a thumping noise in his ear. So he told evil, nasty, attention-seeking stories, did he? She watched him with her head slightly to one side, still smiling widely, as though she knew exactly what he was thinking and whether to see whether he would start shouting again. See, you gotta counter the sweetness with the sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
He's gotta be super fake sweet. With a massive effort, Harry looked away from her, dropping his school bag beside the straight-backed chair and sat down.
There,
said Umbridge sweetly.
We're getting better at controlling your temper, aren't we? Now you're going to do some lines for me, Mr. Potter. No, not with your quill,
she added as Harry bent down to open his bag.
You're going to be using a rather special quill of mine. Here you are.
She handed him a long, thin black quill with an unusually sharp point.
I want you to write. I must not tell lies,
she told him softly. How many times? Harry asked with a credible imitation of politeness.
As long as it takes for the message to sink in,
said Umbridge sweetly.
Off you go.
She moved over to her desk, sat down, and bent over a stack of parchment that looked like essays for marking. Harry raised the sharp black quill and realized what he was missing. You haven't given me any ink, he said.
But you won't need any ink,
said Professor Umbridge with a mere suggestion of a laugh in her voice. Harry placed the point of the quill on the paper and wrote, I must not tell lies. He let out a gasp of pain. The words had appeared on the parchment in what appeared to be shining red ink. And at the same time, the words appeared on the back of Harry's right hand, cut into his skin as though traced there by a scalpel. Yet even as he stared at the shining cut, his skin healed over it, leaving the place where it had been slightly redder before, but quite smooth. Harry looked around at Umbridge. She was watching him, her wide toad-like eyes stretched in a smile.
Yes?
Nothing, said Harry quietly. He looked back at the parchment, placing the quill upon it once more, and wrote, I must not tell lies, and felt the searing pain on the back of his hand again for the second time. Once again the words had been cut into his skin, and once more they healed over seconds later. And on it went. Again and again, Harry wrote the words on the parchment in what he came to realize was not ink, but his own blood. Again and again, the words were cut on the back of his hand, healed, and reappeared the next time he set quill to parchment. Darkness fell outside Umbridge's window. Harry did not ask when he would be allowed to stop. He did not even check his watch. He knew she was watching him for signs of weakness, and he was not going to show any, not even if he had to sit there all night cutting open his hand with his quill.
Come here,
she said after what seemed like hours. He stood up. His hand was stinging painfully. When he looked down, he saw that the cut had healed, but the skin there was red raw.
Hand,
she said. He extended it. She took it in her own. Harry repressed a shudder as she touched him with her thick, stubby fingers on which stood a number of ugly old rings.
Tut-tut, it seems we haven't made much of an impression yet,
she said, smiling.
Well, we'll just have to try again tomorrow evening, won't we? You may go.
Harry left her office without a word. The school was quite deserted. It was surely past midnight. He walked up the corridor then, and he had turned the corner and was sure that she would not hear him. He broke into a run. We'll stop there.
I hope you like that kitten. You're an adorable little kitten.
I love you very much. You're very sweet.
You're the sweetest kitten ever. Sleeper.